You're listening to Trot the Egging, hosted by John Hetherington, working with Widnes Rugby Union Football Club, sponsored by Boydells. This week's rugby story is a local lad who found rugby league initially at Widnes St Mary's, playing right across the back line until he found his place at Standoff. Moving up into high school is when rugby union was forced upon him and his teammates. Upon leaving school, he began to play at his dad's club, Holton Rugby Union Football Club, from the well-known ICI club. Progressing into club captain, the club unfortunately folded, and that was Widnes Rugby Union Football Club gain, as this man, along with a few others, came and strengthened our sides. A first team, second team, captain and coach is all on JP's Wids record. Ladies and gents, Mr. John Parker. Follow, like, share, subscribe and endorse us via Facebook, Trot the Egging, Twitter at Trot the Egging @JohnHeth, Instagram Trot_D_Egg_In, YouTube Trot the Egging, LinkedIn John Hetherington, and Spotify Trot the Egging. How have you been then, John? All right?
Yeah, been sound, mate. Yeah, not too bad at all. We're all happy and working. Worked like through for obviously the last few years, COVID and that. I didn't get furloughed or anything. Both me and Jen, my missus, we both worked through. And then smack bang in the middle of COVID, we had a baby. So yeah, she's 2.5 now. That's flew over, so she keeps us very busy.
I can imagine, mate. Right, so we'll go right back to the beginning, mate. So where was home for you and who lived at home with you?
So when I was first born, my mum and dad lived in Cradley. So we lived there till I was about 8. My brother was born when I was about 3, or just a bit older, about 3.5. So there's 3 years between me and our kid. And then when I was about 8, we moved to Royal Ave, where my mum and dad live now. They've lived there for 30-odd years.
Yeah. And was the competitiveness always there with you and your brother? Because that's quite a close age, isn't it? So it's like you're not far from each other development-wise, though, really, are you, until your team?
No. Yeah, yes and no. I don't know if you know my brother, but he's not very sporty, shall we say. He's very musical. So he got musical talent. He can pick anything up and get a tune out of it. And I got sport. I was always into sports, like playing. I'd just be out. Never had a computer as a kid. Never, like a games console or anything like that. Just I'd always be out on the front. So I don't know if you know where my mum and dad live, it's like right at the bottom of Royal Ave, just before you go through the entry onto Dixie Road. So it's like a bit of
right up by the school then, that end.
Yeah, so it's opposite the school and it backs onto the park. So that little open bit in front, I used to just kick a ball, like constantly kick a rugby ball, pretend running plays in my head and kicking and stuff like that, just counting down. Just that stuff when you're a kid, isn't it? And then you'd be on the field. There was a few lads up and down the street, so we'd play football, or in the summer we'd play cricket. And they always had, Oldfield School always had a set of rugby posts up and a set of football posts up. Don't seem to have it these days, but back then they did. There was always a pitch and football and rugby, so yeah, always just on there.
Plus, you'd have been about, mate, when Widnes were the dominating team in world rugby, wouldn't you? And you'd seen all them sorts of days.
Yeah. That was, that was how I got into it, really, into rugby. Obviously, the ICI, my dad was a member of the ICI when we were kids. And when we were, like, really young, my mum used to work nights on a Friday and a Saturday night. My mum's a nurse, so my dad would get us out of the house on a Saturday and a Sunday, and he'd just be off. And then he used to religiously, when pub drinking times were, restricted, so you'd have 12 till 2, we used to religiously go on a Sunday, 12 till 2, in the ICI club, and then we'd go my nan and granddad's, who live on Lower House, or did live on Lower House Lane. And I remember one day, I just said, to my dad, where are all these people going? And he said, they're going to match. They're going to watch Widnes. So I'd have been about 6, 7. And I must have mired the life out of him, because I think the next week he took me. And then that was it. Like, I was hooked. I'd never seen it like it. I just thought, this is great. And probably, you know, to watch a winning team and the names in the team, when you can start to understand it a bit more and who they were, and local lads as well, not just, you know, stars, but local lads from Widnes playing for the town. Yeah, and good to watch, obviously winning. Yeah, great. That's just got me hooked.
So where would your first club have been? And would it have been rugby league as a kid to start with, John?
It was, mate, yeah. So my dad, I said, obviously must have minded the life out of my dad again then. He looked round and he played rugby union. My dad, he'd never played rugby league. He'd always played rugby union at Holton. And he looked round for a rugby union club, but the Wids weren't doing anything for that, for age groups at that time. This would have been like 87, 88. So they weren't doing anything. I think he looked in the nearest place, I think, was Waterloo. And obviously...
Too far, yeah.
Too far. So he took me to the Maddies. There was a team there at the Maddies. I think I must have joined at the first age group and then did like a year or half a year. And then it split and I stayed in the lower ones. It must have gone from like under sevens to under eights, and I stayed with the under sevens. So yeah, that's how it came about. Played at the Maddies.
Do you remember much about playing as a kid, mate? Was the pitch a shorter pitch or
no, mate? Honestly, full size pitches, tackling. All you did was, there was no tag. All you did training was just two teams split up, have a game of tackle. That was all training was. That was what you did. Yeah. That was just twice a week you did that. Or on a Saturday morning, might have been once in the week and once on a Saturday morning, and then you play on a Sunday. But yeah, I remember being, I do actually remember one of me, I don't know if it was the first or one of my first games, and they put me on. I was a sub and I got put on, and they said, you're fullback. So I was like, right, okay, fullback. And one of the other things, I know many people won't be aware, but I was tiny as a kid, like really small, dead skinny. So put me at fullback, and I remember my dad was roaring at me to get up with play, because I was stood underneath the sticks, leaning on the post, thinking, I'm on fullback, I have to stay.
Yeah, this is what I do. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So took it literally, fullback all the way. So yeah, just my dad was like, get up with play. But yeah, after that, I don't really remember much.
Yeah.
So I probably got to about 9 or 10 when it started. Things started clicking, if you know what I mean, and starting to understand the game more. But yeah, it was literally just full size pitch. I remember at the time thinking, this is massive. Like when you're a little kid, it's
especially huge. When you're tiny, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's huge. Yeah. But yeah, that's just how it was. There was no that's just how it was. Yeah, you just did it, got on with it.
I mean, you don't know no different, mate. It's just what you're doing, isn't it?
You're still
a kid having fun, aren't you? And like loving
that,
life.
And that was it, mate. Yeah, that was it. It was just fun. And I can honestly say that it really was fun.
So when you talk about like at under 10s, it started clicking, mate. Was there a moment of, it'd have been winter rugby then, John, wasn't it?
Yeah, winter rugby, yeah.
So would there have been some over pre-season that just thought, like in the summer, that you just thought, I'll have a proper go, or do you notice, no, did you recognise a change?
I think it came when, trying to think how old it would have been. Well, I'd have been in the Beavers, so that's before Scouts, isn't it? So whatever age group that is, the town, like Scout group and Beaver group, Elder, a competition, rugby competition, rugby league. So I got picked, and in the Beavers, I was at, on Ditchfield Road there, and I got picked. I think in that group, I was probably only one or two people who actually played rugby outside of, you know, the school or what have you. So whoever it was who came down to take the team, because I'd played before and obviously knew the game, they played me at standoff. Now, I'd never played standoff before. I'd always been fullback or wing, a little bit at centre, maybe. I played a little bit at centre, but I've never played standoff. And I think that was when it clicked. That was when I thought, I like this. I like having the ball. And I like, because back then it was, you were first or second receiver. Yeah. And you'd obviously, it was just, it was kids rugby, so, you know, there was no first balls, there was no behind the man, there was no Aussies, Kiwis. It was just, you give it your standoff, he gives it your big lad. And that was, but that was when it clicked. I thought, I like this. You get the ball, you're involved in the game more, you get the ball, you know, you can throw a dummy, you can put a step. I think that was when it clicked. So when I went back then to the Marys for like the next session or the next training or the next game, I think I either asked the coach or my dad asked the coach and said, look, he wants to play a standoff. It must have been awkward. I don't remember it being awkward, but it must have been because the kid who played standoff was the coach's son.
Yeah, it's always going to be tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think that's why I've never been, you know, and I've never showed any interest to play there, but then just, it must have been that age where I was probably 9, 10, like I say, and it just clicked. But that's when I started playing standoff.
Do you reckon you have the skill set, JP? Because, like, it's not only organising, it's a lot of talk. It's having the skill set hands-wise, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that I like to think I've got a decent set of hands. I've not got cow's tits, as they say. I think I'm pretty decent at handling the ball and throwing. I could throw a pass. And, you know, the organising and stuff probably wasn't part of the game. I wasn't what you call vocal as a kid, because again, going back to, like I said before, I was tiny and I wasn't really that type of person. But it was just the getting your hands on the ball and you could change your game and stuff. And it was at that point of time as well where you're getting like 10, 11, 12, where you're playing more competitively as a club, if you know what I mean. It's you're in a league then, so it's becoming, they're not just games every week, it's a league, and you're in the league, and, you know, there's something to play for, and then you're in a cup round. So, I mean, I don't know what rugby league is like nowadays for kids at that age, but back then, like, it was a proper setup. So at the Marys, when I played, there was four teams in the town. So there was, or four clubs, there was Unseed Lions, Alton Hornets, the Tigers, and the Marys. And that was it. Our age level, the Marys always had, as you will know as well, John, but the Marys always had a strong team at age level, all the way up through the 80s and to open age. But at our age level, we weren't quite as good as the other three teams in the town. So back then there was like a premiership, they call it now, and then a first division. We were in the first division. So we were in against St. Helens Crusaders, were the team that stands out. I don't think they're Thatcherleaf now, aren't they?
Thatcherleaf now, mate,
So back then it was St. Helens Crusaders.
It was when I played, actually.
As
a kid. Yeah.
So they have. It was always between us and them for first and second in the league for like 3 or 4 years. And then we had other teams in the league that were like, we had Saddleworth, Laporte Diamonds. Did you ever play against them? From Warrington. Crossfield, I think, had a team in. But some of the clubs had like enough for two teams. You know, some of the Wigan clubs. So they'd have like their strongest team would be in the top one. And then they'd put the second string in our league. So they were always tough games, to be fair. But yeah, we had a good team, but we were probably, I wouldn't like to put anyone down, but we were probably the second or the third best players in the town, if you know what I mean. The cream of the players went to Alton Hornets and Unseed Lions, and then the Tigers.
So It's like you said, you get to probably 11 or 12, mate, and it's not about taking part anymore, is it? It's about winning.
It is.
More so, probably, especially as a kid, because that's when I think that competitive edge really kicks in, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Was them leagues ring-fenced then, John? Was there no promotion relegation that you remember?
I can't remember, mate, because, like I say, I remember it was always between us and St. Helens Crusaders. I think we might have won the league once and they won it three times, but I don't ever remember them not being in the league, if you know what I mean. So there mustn't have been a relegation.
Yeah.
It must have just been, that's the level you're at, that's where you're playing. And in all fairness, or whether the coaches had a thing in that, but in all fairness, we probably weren't good enough to go up into that top league. We'd have probably got stuffed every week, and then that's when lads drop off, don't they, and lose interest, and it's not fun going and getting trounced on a Sunday morning in Wigan, is it?
So not half 10 kickoffs and that.
No, so yeah, that's like I said, yeah, that's I can't remember there being relegation, but yeah,
it must have been. Yeah, if you're competing with each other that often, it's not enough to yo-yo, is it?
No,
it's not enough to go up, come down, because it wouldn't have been as dominant.
I'd say there's probably, might have been a 10-team league, something like that.
And you play each other twice?
Yeah, all the way.
Yeah.
So we played at the Marys, and our pitches were opposite. And then obviously they built houses on them. So then we just had the two pitches at the Marys.
All right, okay.
Can't remember where else we played. We might have played a few games on Prescott Road as well.
Yeah. Okay. So when town team come on at 11, mate, was it something you were sent for, you were interested in?
Yeah. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride, mate, with town team. Was never, ever picked. Okay. Went for every trial, 11s, 13s, 15s, always went because the school sent you, didn't they? So,
yeah.
Back in the day, it was, your school sent you. So I went had trials. I also had trials for Lancs. Didn't get picked. Trials for the Barla. It was a tour to Australia. Can't remember what year that was. But the trial for that were where the David Lloyd are now, you know, in Sankey Cup.
Opposite Crossfield.
Crossfield. I remember going there for trials. That was like, I think that was 3 weeks you went for trials. But again, didn't get picked. But then in Widnes at the time, I was playing standoff, and there was probably, like I say, the three standoffs playing for Luntzeath, Alton Hornets and the Tigers were probably better than me playing in a better league. So you had, don't know if you've ever heard the names, probably not, but you had people like Johnny Poynton was standoff for Luntzeath Lions. Phil Finney was scrum half standoff for Alton Hornets. A lad called Scott Johnson was standoff for the Tigers. So they were all better. And I'll be honest, they were better players than me. That's, you know, it's just the way it goes.
And how did you take that as a kid, mate? Because I know you, so it's like, I know, like, you're pretty, like, chilled out and without being rude, passive, aren't you? You're, like, quite relaxed.
Yeah, I was probably gutted. I was fuming, like, but it just made me a bit more determined to try and get in, but it never happened. And I think once...
Right.
The thing with the town team is, or was how I felt at the time, I think once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
And that's, if you're in at under 11s, well then, you've got to do something major wrong if you don't get in at 13s, and again at 15s. So, and it's hard to break into that. It's like a little club, and it's hard to get into that if you're not in it, because they've all had 2 years together. So I don't want to use the word click, because it isn't, but it's, do you know where I'm coming from? It's already
feels like a cause, yeah. Yeah.
So you go for the trials and they have the trials, but it's the same people getting picked. And I don't remember it, people getting picked. You know, that was a shock. You know what I mean? You always knew the faces. Yeah. So the lads, like my age group would be Danny Esposito, Mark Flanagan, Phil Finney, Johnny Poynton, Danny Burns, Kev Scott, Steele Ledbetter, all players. Don't get me wrong, good players, great players, and well worthy to represent the town, deserved a chance, but just it just never happened for me. So I'm not bitter about it. It just didn't happen. I can't honestly say I can't turn around and say I should have played town team. I think I was better than him because I honestly don't. I know that they were better players. So you can't be bitter about that, can you? That's just the way life is.
No, it is, and you obviously, because of how you are, you just found peace with that, innit? You just always had the aim, which there's nothing wrong with. Remember Fritz has come on when he'd done his episode, and he basically said, what you'll find is it's harder to come out the system than it is to get in the system.
Yeah.
So like what you said, basically, if you pit, you tend to stay in the system until they spit you out at scholarship or academy level. And he's right, like, there was a couple of years that I shouldn't have been in it, but I was in it probably because I'd already been there.
Yeah, and that was the other thing as well. I don't know. It doesn't happen now because you've got academy and scholarship, but back then you didn't have it, so you just got signed. If you were good enough.
The A-League,
Yeah, so Wigan come. Well, Wigan just come and signed players at, 11, 12,
10 grand. It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. Here's 10 grand, just keep playing for your club. And, you knew we had been signed. So when you played teams, you knew we'd been signed. Kevin Sinfield, played against Kev Sinfield as a kid. But, you knew he'd been signed. And it was always, what's that Kevin Sinfield? He's good. And he was head and shoulders above everyone, John. And that's, like 11 and 12, just, he was like a man playing rugby. Yeah. He was good, obviously proved it, didn't he? Went on to prove it.
There's not
many from my age group who went on to play, who got signed, if you know what I mean. So the ones that stick out is Kevin Sinfield, David Mills. He played at the Marys with us. And obviously he got signed and had a fairly good career out of rugby, made some money out of it. But yeah, Phil Finney probably would have gone on and made it because he was that good. But I think an injury stopped it. I've listened to Kev Books, and Kev Books said the same. Me and Kevin the same year at school. And Phil was a really good player.
Right. So when you go into high school, then mate, how did you find the transition into high school?
I had to walk further. So. But so when I went to school, it was Fishing Moor. So I went to Our Ladies primary school, which, for me, mum and dad says you could spit it. But then I went to Fishing Moor. So there was a few of us from like our end who lived on Royal Outlaw, Briarfield, Broadway, around there. And we'd walk, knock for each other in the morning and all walking, five or six of us all walked to school. Picking, knocking for people on the way. It wasn't had a nice, good group of mates. And believe it or not, I'm still mates with most of them, all of them today. Like, we still, we're on a WhatsApp group and we still chat and go for a beer. And so still good mates with them. So I didn't just start writing, in all honesty. I'm not. How can I say it? I didn't particularly like school.
Social then, JP.
Here's another little funny thing. Again, I don't consider myself to be that clever, but I was always in the top sets, and I don't know how. Honestly, I do not know how. But every single year, I'd be in the top sets for maths, English, science. And I used to think, I don't know why I'm in here. It's like, this is like, there's nowhere. But, and my mum and dad would probably tell you as well, they really got in trouble. But I did the bare minimum. That was, just to keep my head above water, not get in trouble, not get caught out, just blended in, if you like. Just blended in. Didn't want to be, didn't want to get in trouble. I was a bit of a goody two shoes. I never wagged it, not once. Never did that.
Blended it in the top sets.
And that was probably, that comes back to that town scene thing, John. It was probably harder to get kicked out of them than it was to get in them. Once you're in it.
So did the rugby carry on in high school, as in you played rugby for Fishermore?
Yeah, it did, mate. So when we played in our ladies, again, I don't know what the script is with the schools now.
Yeah.
But we used to play years 5 and 6 would be an amalgamated team. Yeah. So, and then obviously you're in year 5, you're the young, you're the babies, and then you're going to year 6, you're the bigger. But that was for every sport. So that was for rugby, football, cricket. So at school, I did play rugby, football, cricket for our ladies. Right. And then moving up into Fishermore, you played rugby union, rugby league, and you could play football, cricket. I think it was volleyball, it was basketball. There was other stuff. I didn't bother with that then. Regrettably, I should have played cricket, but I didn't. I just stopped. So I just played rugby league and rugby union.
Yeah.
So you played, I think we only ever played the other four schools in Widnes. So you played in between September and Christmas. I think you'd play a game a month. So you'd play Bankfield, Firfield, Wadeacon, the Joes at rugby league. And then after Christmas, you'd play them at rugby union. And that's
all right. Okay.
That's how I seem to remember it happening. I might be wrong on that, but that's how I remember it happening.
Yeah.
So you play. You played one, and I think we had a coach at the time, and I think, one of the PE teachers was, I think he was a rugby union teacher, Mr. Ryan, and he basically said, if you don't play rugby union, you're not getting picked to play rugby league. So no one wanted to play rugby union. Yeah, but no one wanted to play it. It was, and thinking back, again, only years later when you understand rugby union, but thinking back then, you were just because the teachers were rugby league mentality as well. You didn't get coached as such. It was like when you get tackled in rugby union, you've got to drop the ball. So we literally dropped the ball and would just like leave it on the floor. There was no like you never got. We never. I don't think anyway. Never got shown to put it back behind you and keep your hand on it for a minute and stuff like that. It was just you leave go of the ball. So it's like a really alien thing to you, isn't it? When all you've done in rugby league is when you get tackled, don't lose that ball, don't get it ripped off you, because you could rip that as well. That was the other thing you could rip off people. Back in the '80s.
So I think teacher was involved with the Wids as well, wasn't he? Was it
don't know if it's the same one. Don't know if it's the same one.
Okay.
But then we got a, I think it was then when I was in 30, or it might have been. So when we went into year 9, that's when the schools joined up.
Okay.
So Fishermore and St. Joseph's became St. Peter and Paul. So that would have been 95, 95, I think, or 94. That's when they joined up. And that's when, then obviously, you go from being an automatic pick, because there's probably only 15 or 16 lads playing in your year at Fishermore. So then I've been double. And again, St. Joseph's were a better rugby playing team than we were. So I wasn't playing standoff anymore then. I went back to being a fill-in out on the wing or on the bench or occasionally in the centre. But I kept making myself available and turning up.
Right. So when you're flicking between the two sports, mate, because are you still playing club rugby league at this point?
Yeah, still playing for the Marines, yeah. Up at that point, still playing standoff. And again, like I said, still in that bottom league. So, but yeah, every week through the winter. Great. Loved it. Good. And we had a good set of lads, like I say, the Marys. A few lads from Frodsham. That's how David Mills came over. We had a lad playing called John Hodgson. He was his dad. Richard Hodgson played prop. And he was mates with Dave Mills at school. And he brought him over. There was another lad from Runcorn came over. And we had a good team. We had a laugh. It was enjoyable. We had a little tour to Pathelly, Butlins at Pathelly. We did a tour. We played a team down there, but obviously North Wales team did with Rugby Union. So we played them at Rugby League, battered them. And then we were supposed to play the one game, and we said, oh, we're here for the week, can we play yet again? We'll play Rugby Union. So they agreed to it. I think they might have beat us. I can't remember the score in the Rugby Union. But that was when my dad had to do a bit of coaching on the morning before the game.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, this is what you're doing.
Second
now.
Team style.
This is what you're doing. There's not, like, reports. He didn't have a clue, Rugby Union. My dad was the other one. But yeah, Jim Mills came on that tour with Dave. Oh, so it was mad, yeah. Yeah, it is.
So do you know when you're flicking between the cords, mate?
How
are you seeing the game when you go back to the other? Was it altering your game management? Was you seeing the game differently in one cord to the other?
And
what was easier to you?
At that point in my life, rugby league was easier because it's all I'd known, all I knew.
Yeah.
And it was easy because that was all I knew. It's not easy, is it? Got by any stretch of the imagination, but it just came, rugby league just came naturally. I felt rugby union, I had to try it. And you couldn't say, like, I don't know anybody at my age group who actively went and played rugby union anywhere else. Do you know what I mean? When we were kids, you just didn't do it because you just get skitted for playing rugby union. And that sounds terrible. But that's what it was like. You're just, why are you playing that? What are you playing that for? That's not a proper game. And because it was just a stronghold witness, wasn't it? And it's just rugby league. You don't play rugby union.
It's probably always been elitist as well, hasn't it? Without being rude, probably where the money is and stuff.
I think so. And I think lads, quite a few of my dad's mates, and I know it happened back in the day to lads from the Wids who were signed. From the Wids, or signed from other clubs, signed from Halton. There was lads signed from Halton back in the 60s and 70s. And there used to be a thing, apparently, my dad's told me about it, there used to be a thing called the Wids Disco on a Friday night or a Thursday night or something like that. And they weren't even allowed in the club to go the Wids Disco.
If you signed for Billy, you were bad.
And not even... They hadn't even been signed from the Wids, do you know what I mean? But it was, they were going for a drink with the missus and the mates, and they just, no, you're not coming in. That, just like when you look at things now, just bizarre, like absolutely mental how that attitude can be.
It happened to Jimmy O'Neill, didn't it? Jimmy O'Neill went out in the club for years. Yeah.
I know. It's like ridiculous. So going back, you just wouldn't play rugby union. And it was always like, you played it at school because you had to if you wanted to play rugby league for the school. And that was, so you just did it. It was just like, oh, well, we'll do it. I don't really, when we joined up, I wasn't really in the team. And I suppose at that point then, I'd have been, what's he in 9, 13, 14.
13, 14.
I suppose then that was when I got a little bit, what's the word?
Fell out of love with it. Probably, didn't you? Yeah.
I just fell out of love with it. At the same sort of time, the Maddies at that point then were struggling. We were scratching around for numbers. So that was less enjoyable going away with, you know, going to places with 13, a birth 13, and then you'd have someone's younger kid brother on the bench in case you needed a sub, and it just became difficult. And then I think, I can't remember exactly what happened with the Maddies. I can't remember whether they've folded or I left and packed in around that time. But yeah, I become disillusioned with it, shall we say, and just sort of stopped playing, really. I still put my hand up and got picked for the school. But then once you go into fourth year, think back then, it was more like, well, we don't do sports now because you're doing your GCSEs. So they didn't seem to be as much, if you know what I mean. And I can't, my memory around that time's a bit hazy, but I just sort of become disillusioned with it and sort of stopped playing altogether, really. So at some point, I can't remember what point that was, but yeah, just stopped playing altogether.
And is that when you've got to start thinking about what life's going to be after school, and what was you thinking about doing, and what did you go on to do?
So at that point then, really, you know, my mum and dad were pushing me hard to study, stay down the other. And again, like I've already mentioned, I didn't like school. I'm not going to lie, it didn't. I'm not academic whatsoever. I don't like sitting and studying at books. So I was always going to leave school at 16. And for long enough, I wanted to be a car mechanic. I was mad on cars. But I just couldn't get an apprenticeship anywhere. I was struggling. And then you'd apply for, I don't know if that's still going now, but there used to be a thing called TTE, which was like ICI and a few other big.
Andy Gilfe done that, you know.
Did he?
Yeah, with Eli Lilly, that's how he got.
Yeah. TTE. So you used to, again, apply for that, didn't get in, but they wanted the elite. They wanted people who were, you know, A stars, and that was that. So that didn't happen. I couldn't get a job as a mechanic anywhere, bizarrely. And then when I was, so at the end of your fourth year, then you go and do work experience, don't you? And you go in and you look who you can pick. And there was a company called Speeds, who were electrical contractors in Widnes. My dad had worked there, he'd served his time there and had worked for them on and off over the years. So I picked them, and I got sent on a fortnight work experience to work there and absolutely loved it. I thought it was great. It was brilliant. Just a laugh with the lads on building sites. And this was before the days of health and safety. So there was no boots. There was no boots. There was no hard hats. It was, you rocked up in a pair of jeans and a t-shirt and your trainers and just got on with the job. I enjoyed it. I thought, yeah, this is something like I want to do. I want to work in construction, not really too bothered. But on the also, having said that, at that time as well, I liked IT. I was into IT. So I was doing IT at school, GCSE, and liked computers. And everyone was saying, oh, everything will be on computers. You won't. I suppose it was partly right, but you won't need car mechanics in a few years. Everything will be done on computers, and computers will do this. And so that was a bit drummed into you as well. So I actually got a job, finished school. And I thought, when I finish school, you finish in like the April, don't you? And then you're on exam leave. I thought, this would be great, this. Just going to have a summer of doing nothing. and I finished school. And my dad sat me down and said, don't be thinking you're sitting here doing nothing all summer. You're getting a job. I was like, right, okay. He went, doesn't have to be your job for life, but you're getting a job. So at that point then, I already had a job. I'd had a few jobs when I was a kid. So I'd had a paper round. I'd worked on the market. I always liked having cash, if you know what I mean. I always liked having a few quid. I was into fishing. That's probably one thing I probably should have mentioned, actually. I was mad on fishing as well as a kid. So I'd spend most of the summer holidays at the Clink all day, every day at the clink down here, fishing all day. So yeah, I always had, like I say, always had a job from like 13. At that point then I was working glass collecting in the ICI. So we're still doing that on a Friday and a Saturday night. And then I got a job, this is going to sound mad, this, but I got a job as a web page designer. It was like a little, like a YTS type scheme, 50 quid a week. And it was in Waterloo in Liverpool. So I went, and I'll never forget it. It's still there, the doorway, because I see it occasionally now, because of where I work now. And I see this doorway. It was like upstairs above an Iceland, and it was an office, and it was just all these people. So it was 50 quid a week, and it used to cost me 25 quid a week on the train. And all these people were in there doing this like YTS and web page designing. And there were people like that had degrees, that had masters, you know, had A-levels qualifications. And there's little me, 16, like skinny as anything, big mop of Oasis haircut. Yeah, just thought, I'm blagging this. Like, this is mad. What am I doing here? You still there?
Yeah.
I thought it was gross. Yeah, this is mad. So I did that for about 8 weeks, 9 weeks, something like that over the summer. And in the meantime, I've still been applying for jobs and trying to get an apprenticeship. And then my dad pulled a few strings, in all honesty, with Speeds. And then they offered me a job. So basically, it was an apprenticeship, 4-year apprenticeship. In being an electrician. So I started that in like the August time, and then college started in the September. So yeah, that was that just confirmed the fact, and I've gone full circle now again, but that just confirmed the fact at the time that I didn't want to be in an office. I just absolutely no way working in an office. I wanted to be out in you know, factories or building sites, whatever the type of work. But yeah.
But at least you found that out early, though, John, innit? At least you weren't like further on in life and thought, what am I doing?
Yeah, and that's, you know, I'll hold my hands up and say I'm really lucky. You know, my dad had a contact and pulled a few strings and got me put a word in for me. Went guarantor, I think. got me the job, and yeah, just never really looked back then. Just thought, this is, you know, and again, was earning £67 a week as a first year apprentice, and I had more money then than I have now. I'm telling you,
smashing life, yeah,
yeah. And the days, so I was gonna say, in the days when you could go out with a fiver and like end up bladdered and still get on, like still have
change, your tea in a taxi. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what were work like with you playing rugby still, mate?
Right. So at that point then, I started playing rugby up edge in the March just before I finished school. So I was 16. And it started as a bet. I was glass collecting.
This is at Halton, mate, innit?
Yeah, at Halton, yeah. I was glass collecting in the ICI on a Friday night. And someone said, oh, the third team are short tomorrow. And someone said, oh, I think either I said or someone said that I could play rugby. And I said, oh, I'll play rugby. And someone said, you can't play rugby. You're not big enough. Because again, I was still tiny, 16. And so I thought I could, if I had any boots, like I'd play. And before I could get the sentence out my mouth, a pair of boots appeared. So I couldn't back out. So yeah, I played 13 Halton on the left wing. Was my first game on the back pitch at the ICI. So on the old Fisher Moor pitches, which you know, were like, they were like home, really. I knew them pitches already, so...
Yeah,
and I just... Because I knew everyone, because obviously my dad had played there, and I think my dad was still playing then, actually. So in them years, just going back a bit, in them years where I wasn't playing anymore, I was going watching my dad on a Saturday, standing in muddy fields, getting wet while my dad was playing. And so, yeah, I've got, at that point then, I got to understand a little bit more rugby union.
Yeah.
So started playing third team at the ICI or at Holton. And then that, obviously, it was March time, so there was probably only 4 weeks of the season left. And then I don't think I did a pre-season that year. But yeah, I started work then in the August, started my apprenticeship in the August, and started playing again. So I'd only been playing. When we started back, I was in the second team then, playing outside centre in the second team. And again, because I knew most of the lads, I was looked after, you know.
Yeah.
Lads who knew me dad, played with me dad, or so they were a little bit older. Obviously, I was probably the youngest or one of the youngest in the team. You were looked after, and no one bullied you, no one picked on you. You were looked after, and you know, you only got the ball when probably they thought it was right. I probably wanted it a bit more, but but I'd only been working. It must have been the October. I'd only been working about 6 or 8 weeks, and I broke my thumb. And actually, I had 3 weeks off work. So I broke my right thumb. And then at that point, work were fine. They didn't say anything, but I didn't get paid. That was, you know, that was the deal. You didn't, if you weren't in, you didn't get paid. They were fine. They never said anything. They never said you can't be doing that. But I was quite lucky with injuries in that I didn't really have many bad ones to take a lot of time off. No, apart from the thumb, no breaks, no fractures. Toes, ligaments, ankle ligaments, knee ligaments, ruptured cartilage in my knee was probably the worst one. The worst one was a dead leg, believe it or not. That was horrendous.
So when you're around these fellas and that, and you're probably, without knowing it, being a sponge, aren't you? Getting little tips and intricacies off people.
Yeah.
So how did you spell it Holton going? And what happened at the end? What was it, because the ICI was shutting, or was the team ready to call it a day? Or?
We had, like I said, when I first started playing, they had three teams. The third team being generally a lot older fellas, and I'd probably say, like my age now, 40. 42, and older, and it was a social team, so they played social rugby, and then the second team was the feeder into the first team. So the second team, I think that next year then, when I got picked in the second team, the third team was dropping off. It was getting less and less. Lads were retiring, lads were finishing playing. Instead of playing a game every week, they might play a game a month, or they might play every couple of months, and then that went. So then, once that goes, then your second team will start to struggle because they haven't got the numbers to back them up. So then we kept the second team. We were still the second team going for a good number of years, probably till I was about 21, 22. And then the second team went because we couldn't keep the numbers. It was just to be short every week. In all honesty, it had probably gone a lot sooner, only for a guy called Ronnie Chappell. Have you ever heard of a guy mentioned called Ronnie Chappell? He was like Mr. Holton, if you like. And another lad called Col Fillingham. Have you heard of Col Fillingham? He sadly passed away when he was 21 after breaking his leg playing for Holton. But Ronnie and Col Fillingham, they set up a Colts team. So I'd have been, at that point, I think I'd have been 19. I was too old to play Colts for them because they were under 18s. But they started up a Colts side with a load of lads from the Abs. So you had Steve Miller, Paul Kerfey, Jay Swinley, Peter Swinley, Gary Kelly, Mickey Kelly, all these lads from the Abs, and they started it up. I think it's like a bit of a like a distraction to keep them out of trouble, if you like. But they were great, absolutely brilliant. And they kept, with that influx, they kept the club going for another 4 or 5 years. But yeah, that was really
good effort, that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And they got, you know, they got a Colts team out most weeks. And again, going all over. But it was just literally because Ronnie Chappell and Cole Fillingham, they'd go around and pick lads up out, go and pick them up out of bed on a Sunday morning to get them, because they'd been out the night before, and pick them up and take them to clubs. Honestly, it was just, it was funny. Yeah. But at the time, I played a couple of games for them, you know, as a ringer. It was good. And some of them ended up, you know, well, most of them actually ended up coming in and playing first team. And going on to be, you know, some of my best mates over the years, yeah.
So chat about the first team then, mate. What are your best memories from Houghton? And
winning the league on my debut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a John Terry.
Yeah. So it was 1999, I think. I'd have been 18. I'd been in the second tier, had a good run in the second team, then playing standoff or centre. So in the second team at that point, there was a good bunch, good mix of lads that were like in and out of the first team, coming back from injuries, steady feed of younger lads. So there was myself, really good mate of mine, Gaz Atten, another lad called Si Owens, couple of others who were like a year or two older than me, and then you had a few fellas who were like mid-20s who played for a few years and were in the second team. So again, they looked after the young lads, and we always got looked after, and we never got bullied or anything like that by any other teams. So I'd had a good run in the second team. I was playing standoff or centre, and it was around this point then, 18, that I went tall and filled out a little bit. So I think we had a few, it was towards the end of the season, and the first team hadn't had many games, and so there was a few joint games, first and second team. And I think at that time then, it sounds mad these days, but I think at that time they had no coach. So Andy Mack was basically picking the team and with the captain. Andy wasn't captain at the time, I don't think, but Andy was picking the team with the captain. And Andy was playing, and he played a few games in the seconds. And like I said, I'd had some good games, and probably, again, by good luck, Andy had been playing 10. I'd been playing 13, I think. And I'd had a couple of good games, scored some couple of tries, and they had a league decider. Against a team called Oral Anvils, which at the time was Oral's third team or something like that. And they put them in the league structure. Now, earlier in the season, they'd gone to Oral and got 18 or 21 nil at half time. We were getting beat, the first team. I wasn't in the first team in that game. But they came back and drew the game. Either 18 all or 21 all, I can't remember the score, but they come back and drew the game, and they had a good team at that point, good side. I got picked on the wing for this last game of the season. So I've never been in the first team, didn't know what it was like. I've been, you know, around the lads, I knew some of them. But I've been up training at that point. I was training twice a week. I just remember, it was a bit of a blur really, but I just remember Watty, who's the scrum half, Macca's mate, saying, I'm gonna be taking quick taps. Get with me if I take a quick tap. So I just remember him, he took a quick tap, and he was like on my wing, I was again on the left wing, he took a quick tap and drew a man and give it to me, and scored. Like, bounced the wing, bounced my opposite number off and scored, and was like, you know, as debuts go, you can't really get much better scoring and winning the league.
Oh, and Hero.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was how it was. And then the next year then, I was in the first. That was it then. Just, I was in the first. I was either wing, played the odd game at fullback, and a bit of outside centre, because again, I wasn't quite filling out. But yeah, I was in. And again, like we've already said, it was harder to get out than it was.
Yeah, once you were in.
Once I was in. Because we had the second team, but then basically the team would pick itself every week because the better players were there, do you know what I mean? And that's what happened, really. You just got picked. So
did growth spurt alter your game at all?
Yeah, I suppose it did in a way. Made me a little bit more robust, shall we say, and able to ride a tackle and obviously move into playing at 12 and becoming sort of a craft ball, I suppose you'd call me. It's some stage.
You had a bit more than that, mate, didn't you? But I know what you're saying, because that numbers associated, well, probably more 13, the way the game's changed, isn't it, is associated with that now. But
when
we were playing, mate, the 12 was associated with that, wasn't it?
So yeah, it was.
Moving to the Wits then, mate, how did that come about and why? You come with a couple of years, come, didn't you?
Yeah, so that would have been 2006. So my last ever game for Halton was when I got that dead leg. And honestly, John, I've never, ever had an injury like that. I was months where I couldn't walk proper.
All right.
I went to, I remember it happening, Kirby got knocked off tackling someone, and that didn't happen. So I was next man, he like bounced him off. So I went, right, I'm gonna hit him. He's not Kirby off, so I'm going to have to give him everything I've got. And it was just, he accidentally kneed me right in the middle of my quad, and knew straight away something's not right there. So I went off the pitch, this would have been about March time in the season, and I was captain. I was club captain at that point as well, so I didn't want to come off. But I had to. I couldn't. Something was majorly wrong, and then the next day, again, just I couldn't move my leg. It was terrible. The pain was, I've never felt pain like that. And then I took the Monday off work, and I managed to hobble into work on the Tuesday. Like drove in, but then hobbled all around work. I remember walking into the cabin. I used to wear overalls. I was on a job at Manchester Uni, and I used to wear overalls, so I'd get changed in the cabin after work. I just had a pair of shorts on under my overalls. And I remember taking my overalls off and thinking, what's that on my leg? I could just see like the top of my knee. And I pulled my shorts back and my leg was black. Literally just black. And I went to the doctors or the hospital. I must have gone to the doctors because he went, oh yeah, you've got a dead leg, and referred me for physio. NHS, about 8 weeks, 10 weeks later, I got a physio appointment, by which time I was back on the mend, but I still couldn't run. So yeah, that was the worst one. But then through the summer, we trained a bit, and then I was captain. I remember Andy coming to me and saying, I think he knocked at my mum and dad's one night on his way home from somewhere, and he said, I'm not playing next year, mate. I'm going to go to the Wits. They've been asking me for years. I've always said no. And he had his reasons. I think he wanted a new challenge. Fair enough. I had no issue with Andy going. And we probably could have survived if just Andy had gone. But I feel terrible for saying this now, but it was Derek Dyer leaving without making him feel guilty. Because he was front row. And without Derek, was a stalwart, really. Played every week, put his body on the line, was there all the time. And without him, we couldn't get a front row. And we were moving on the bones then, we had literally, you know, 17, 18 most weeks. Some weeks we were lucky we'd get you'd get 20 lads. And then, but then because you've got 20 lads, you're gonna disappoint someone because they can't get in. You're only allowed three subs. So you can't keep it going forever like that, John. It's just, without a second team, a club will slowly but surely, it's like a slow death that you can just see happening in front of your eyes.
So you want to see that early, didn't you? So that's obviously helped. Something we'll talk about in a bit, and it'll help you for something we'll talk about that you're going to take on. So you've seen both sides of the coin quite early.
Yeah. So that summer then, we got to about a week before the season, we had a meeting, and I'd already booked to go to Australia for the cricket in the December. So my intention was I wasn't going to play in case I got hurt and I had to cancel the trip. So my intention was I wasn't playing, but I would run the team and help the team and do whatever was needed. We had a meeting about a week before the season, and then we decided there and then we couldn't. We put all, you know, you sit down, you write all the names down, who said they're going to play, who's not. And we couldn't field the team. So the decision was made then to withdraw from the league rather than start the season and get two or three games in and then withdraw from the league. It didn't seem right. And I hated it in previous years when that had happened to. You know, when you're in a league and you're expecting, and then you lose the points that you've already beat that team because they withdrew from the league. I hated that. It seemed dishonest to me. So we made the call, the committee, and to withdraw from the league with the intention of having a season away, trying to get a few friendlies, trying to pick a few people up. I did a bit of an interview. It might have even been with Ian Chabot in the Weekly News. We put posters up around Widnes, put advert in the Weekly News, you know, asking for players, and it just didn't materialise. So at that point then, again, like I said, I had no intention of playing, absolutely no intention of playing rugby because I was going away. Came back from Oz in the January. And Macca was already playing at the Wids. Carl had gone up the Wids when we withdrew from the league. Carl Shingler was gonna stay. So he didn't do a full pre-season with the Wids. He just went up for a game, I think, at one of the trial games. And then, you know, obviously the rest is history with Carl, isn't it? So again, I think that season, I had a bit of, before I went away, I'd just go and watch a few teams. So I'd watch the Wits, I'd watch Birchfield, I'd even gone over to Moore, watch Moore. And I was considering, I was going to join Birchfield, in all honesty. That was where I thought I could probably go, I could probably fit in. And then it happened again. It happened really accidentally how I ended up at the Wids, because I don't know if you remember it. We had a game, like a Halton. We had a Halton game against the Wids thirds on the first team pitch at the Wids. So it was to try and get people back involved. And so we had one game with like rolling stuff and stuff. And then off the back of that, Gaz out of my mate and Watty started playing in the second team for the Wits. So Gaz reminded me, come and have a game, come and have a game. So that's again just accidentally. I just went up and had a game because they were my mates, if you know what I mean. I still wanted to play rugby, but I wanted to play with my mates. That was the enjoyment I got out of it, was playing with my mates, just having a laugh, the change of mood before the game, having a beer after it. And that was where it was my mates. That was, you know, it was a social thing for me. That was how I seen it. So yeah, totally accidentally ended up at the Wids, in all honesty, just playing in the seconds. And I think I was working away at the time, that's right. I'd come back from Oz and I'd got a job straight away, working away. So Tank was coach, was mithering the life out of me to come training. I said, I'm working away, like there's no, you know, I'm in Mansfield. There's no way I'm getting back on a Tuesday and a Thursday. And he was like, oh man, well, you know, with expenses and so I'm like, what? The 2 hours drive, there's no chance, like, so I played in the seconds. That was what I did for that season. And then
I believe the tramadol did it, mate. You come home.
I know. Yeah. But I remember then I did a full pre-season and then got picked for the first game of that season. I think again, Macca was injured again. He had no luck when he first went up the Wids with injuries. That was just he seemed to be his hammies all the time and little niggles, and but he'd probably tell you himself. So Phil Glover was 10. I think we played Fleetwood in the cup. And I remember the first tackle, Phil called a drop off, like a scissor ball, back in. And I remember the seven hit me. Oh, that was a good hit. That was a bit heavier than I'm normally used to. Because normally, the second, like in the Wids second team in Alton, I'd probably ride the first tackle off a seven and then look to offload or, you know, make a couple of yards and then get tackled.
Yeah.
But he hit me. And as soon as he hit me, the eight hit me as well. So I thought, this is quick. And the ball went flying. The ball went for a Burton. I just remember getting up thinking, that was quicker. Like, I wasn't expecting that. Wasn't expecting it to be that quick. So, definitely was quicker paced. Definitely a step up from what I was used to. So, yeah, that was... And then, didn't get picked for a few weeks after that. Was in and out of the seconds. But, yeah, I ended up, you know, settling in and enjoying my time at the Wids and making, again, more mates and more friends up there and settling right in.
Oh, we had a good spell in the twos, mate, when like my age group come through at the same time and played with you and Undia at the second team. And
yeah,
you would never know you were an outsider, like not a Wids lad. Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't know that.
Yeah, it was again total and utter accident how that ended up. Things hurt my shoulder playing for the first team, and in all honesty, I thought it was worse than it actually ended up. I thought I'd proper done my shoulder in. So I think the next game was the Isle of Man away, so I had like a bit of a heart to heart with Tank in the club after the match, and my arm was like killing me, and I said, look, that's me done, I'm not playing them anymore, I'm finished, my shoulder's deuced. I'm not playing. You know, that's me done. Don't pick me for next week. I'm not bothered about. I don't want to let you down for the Isle of Man, so I don't want to go. I won't. That's me finished. And felt a bit of a fraud then, because about a week later, so there was nothing up with my shoulder. It was fine. I'd already made this statement. I wasn't playing, and so I didn't. And then again, we went. So I packed in, and me and Jen went to Australia then for Christmas and New Year, or for New Year again. And then when I came back, a chance conversation with Jed. Might have even been a chance conversation that my dad had with Jed. But Jed said, Your John's wasted not playing. Why doesn't he come and do the second team? I think he'd be great at second team captain. So I broached the subject and I thought, do you know what? That would probably suit me, playing in the second, week in, week out. You know where you are. You can plan things around it, you know. But yeah, that was how that ended up. I've got a funny little story about Tank. I don't know if you were playing or not, but there was a game. The back story of it was, I was out on the Saturday night. I was going to a concert at the Power Hall. So I got picked and I was on the bench and I was fuming because I thought, I'm on the bench. I'm probably only going to get 10 minutes. And I'm going to gig. I'd rather just not play and or go in the seconds, you know what I mean? And then I know what I'm getting.
Yeah.
But because I'm not like that, and I wouldn't not play because I was doing something after rugby, I played, well, turned up. So I'm on the bench. So we did the warm-up, and obviously, wear my glasses, don't I? So don't wear my glasses for playing. So I comes out, I'm on the bench, and I've got my glasses on. And he says to me, "Why have you got your glasses on?" I said, "Well, I can't see." And he went, "What do you mean?" So then my brain started going, and I thought, I'm going to have him here. So he said, what do you mean you can't see? How do you play rugby then? I said, well, generally speaking, the opposite team are in a different colour shirt. So I know that I've got to try and tackle one of them. And you know that big white thing that you throw about? And he went, yeah. I said, well, when someone throws it at me, I try and catch it. But when someone else has got it in a different coloured shirt, I'll try and tackle him. And he looked at me and didn't know if I was being serious. Or like me and Mac will still laugh about it today, but didn't know if I was being serious. And he didn't put me on. And I'm convinced it was because he thought I couldn't see. So, again,
it's pretty troubling.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Like the next, that was again. So at that point, then I see my ass then proper because I ran in the changing room, got my kit bag, legged it. And I think he thought I had a cob on with him because he didn't put me on, which I did, to be fair. Yeah. But I was going out, I was just genuinely going out, and my mates were already out. And you know, there's nothing worse when.
Yeah, no, catch up.
You're trying to catch people up, yeah. So I proper see my ass over that. And I just said to him, I said to Tank at that point, don't do that to me again. Like, don't not put me on. I'd rather just play in the seconds. That's all I wanted to do. At the end of a week of work, all I wanted to do was have a game of rugby. I wasn't bothered if it was first, seconds, or thirds. I'd have played anywhere. That was just the way I was. I just wanted a game. So, yeah, that was Tank and his selection policies.
Brilliant, that. At least it weren't like a Cumbrian team away, mate.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Then when I came back then and did the seconds, and it was Tank and Louis were the coaches, weren't they? And I can take some credit, and I'll happily take some credit, but I can't take it all. We had some great players in that second team. I remember picking a team one week, and I think there was five standoffs in the back line. You had like Andy Mack, that Troy Spell, Brian Cartwell. I'll tell you what the game it was. I think you played for the opposition at Manchester. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And yeah, they were short, and you played half a game for them, didn't you? And we put something like 100 points on them or something. But yeah, the team then was just outstanding. Like, the forwards were great, and everyone trained. That was the other thing. Everyone trained. It was a lack. There was it was fun. No one was getting paid. And I know Tank and Nui always make a big deal of that, don't they? These are getting paid. He's on 50 quid a man in to be playing and blah, blah, blah. Didn't bother me if the poor cop opposite me was on 100 quid a game or nothing. I just wanted to play for fun. And when you become mates with the lads in the team, it means a bit more, I think. It makes lads do a little bit more for the person next to them, if you know what I mean. If you don't really know someone. And I think that's what the Wids had at that time. I think they've still got it now. But at that time, definitely, all the lads wanted to play. And yourselves coming through from the Colts, you could tell yous all wanted to play for your mate. You'd do the extra work because you didn't want to let your mate down. And that's what rugby's about for me.
Well, when it helped as well, because we didn't lose much, right? From what I remember,
and
that, did
that's
we?
The thing. Yeah. No, that's the thing. Just fail. Every bloody time, wasn't it? We had some cracking games against them. But yeah, they were a tough nut to crack. Tough nut.
Yeah. So, when did the decision come? Had you stepped away from competitive playing when you were looking after us in the twos at that point?
No.
Because you were still playing with us, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah. So, when the agreement was, I'd come back. As captain, so I took captain to me you captain the team, but you run the team, you run the seconds. That's what everyone had done previously, who I'd played under. So I'd played under, I think, Brian Gill. Derek Dyer was captain, I think, for the seconds for a spell. And they just, you know, they ran the team. So I didn't have any issue with that. And I wasn't, at that point, I wasn't afraid of not picking myself because someone better was available, if you know what I mean. So that first season when I was captain, I probably was a little bit selfless in a way because I didn't pick myself a lot of the time. I would put other lads in and, you know, I'd play when required and if needed. But yeah, I always thought I picked the strongest team that was available. Didn't matter who you were or if there was someone there who's better than me, then that's fine. They can play. I've not got an issue with that. My second year as captain, and again, I wasn't going to do it. I'd said I'll do a year and see. And then they go and give you club under the year, don't they? And
tie you up.
Parade you round at the club dinner. So I did another year. And that then, I'd made that decision then that it was going to finish. I thought, this is my last year. So more selflessly that second year, I did pick myself an awful lot more. I played. I didn't miss games. Even with the year before, I had little daft niggling injuries that just lingered. You know, that you couldn't shake off. Instead of it being 3 or 4 weeks or... but yeah, that last year, I just... Because I knew it was my last year, I just ignored all that and thought... I'm carrying on. I'm going to play, and this is my last one. So, going to enjoy it.
So, like you should as well. So, you become a spectator then, mate, didn't you? And I know I asked you off recording before, and it's all been announced by the club and that now, so we can talk about it. But some big shoes to fill, and you're taking over a good team. What Dan's left behind there, right? So, what are you looking forward to most with the twos, mate? And what's it feel like to be back?
Getting to know the lads, I think. I think that's, you know, still know a few of them. You know, your Tom Spencers, your Gavins, Geraghty. it's 10 years since I stopped playing. 10 years ago, I was 32. So they were kids when I finished. And now they're, you know, where I was, I suppose, early 30s. So just getting to know the lads and trying to integrate myself, if you like, and just get my messages across and filter things down from the first that need doing and filter things up from the thirds and just the way I see things. And I will say Dan's done a great job, but what's he done it down for 4 or 5 years? Something like that, is it?
Like over a couple of periods,
and he's done a great job. And I don't know what's going on. To be honest, I don't want to know. Nothing to do with me. And again, totally accidentally, I suppose. Andy asked me. He just I think he planned it because.
Do you want to be clubbing next year and then?
I'll tell you what happened. We played golf the other week at Widnes for Lammy's 40th. And I got a lift up there, so I had my clubs and Macca was in the car. And he went, I'll take your clubs. You can pick them up from ours. Because I'd just gone straight on the air. I said, yeah, all right, sound nice one, Andy. I was just going to leave them here. Or get someone to, you know, drop them somewhere. I'm not really that bothered. So he said, no, I'll take them. So then I went to pick them up on a Sunday. And that's when he called me and just said, look, I think Dan Newall's left. We're going to be struggling for a coach. Would you be interested? I had a think about it. Probably about a week, 10 days. He said what he'd want. Well, you know, he told me what he wanted from me. He'd already, I think he'd spoke to Jed and he spoke to Spike and they've said they didn't have an issue. So, yeah, just I'm looking forward to it, to be honest, to get back involved, you know. I do like rugby, and hopefully we can continue the good success that Dan has had and you know, the what's the right word? The I can't think of the word.
He's got it right there at the minute. Him and Watto, by the way, we've overlooked Watto a bit, but the camaraderie in the team, but it there's really good, isn't it? And
yeah, the environment, that's the word. Yeah, the environment, and you know, hopefully we can continue that on and people get on board and buy into me being coach. I'm
sure they will, mate.
I'm not going to be doing much coaching, I'll tell you that. I'll just be, you know, the way I see it is Andy's the head coach, Woody's the assistant. Everything that goes on in the club, first, second, third, should come through them as to, you know, that's the message. I'm there on a Saturday to relay the message, see what's going on in the game, because the captain can't. I understand that from being captain. You can't see what's going on the pitch. I don't know if you remember back then, I got Sean involved. I asked Sean Newall to come and be my eyes and ears, and me and Sean got on really well doing that job. So, and then in that last year, the second year I did it, there was me, Sean, and Andy O'Neill a lot of the time as well. And we just did it between the three of us, which made it, you know, really easy.
Yeah. No, it's a very good team to take over, and hopefully they've got, like you said there, there's 10 or so years as a unit together yet, and we're only going to be blessed with people coming through, hopefully. So fingers crossed, mate,
that's the other positive thing about the Cup, like we touched on earlier on. Once your team started dying, your third team goes, your second team won't last much longer after that. If your second team goes, your first will struggle. So you've always got to have an influx of players and bringing people in. So that's where the Colts and the juniors and everything intertwines with the club and keeps the club going.
And in the same breath, mate, no one's bigger than the club you play for, who you're told you're playing for, don't you?
Exactly, mate. Exactly, yeah. That's the attitude you've got to have.
Right, so we've got a few daft questions for you, John.
Okay.
Right, so any pre-match superstitions?
Not superstitions as such, but I used to have they ended up knackered, obviously. Horrible old pair of underpants that I wore for rugby that were like full of holes, absolutely no support in them whatsoever. But they were like the undies I had to wear to play in. That was it. But no, as for nothing really, nothing superstitious, no traditions, no set things of doing, no putting my left sock on first. It just turned up, got changed, went out. Yeah, that was it. Didn't really think about it.
So the toughest player you played with and against, but you might not know, you probably won't know the name against, but there might be someone that stands out from a club that you've got, you know what? Well, I struggled with him.
And I think you'll probably know. So the one, I had to think about this. When you sent the questions over and that, and the one that come to mind was, do you remember the guy who played six for Sale with like grey hair, and he looked like he looked like about 110.
Yeah.
But I remember again trying to tackle him, and I'll be honest, you know, hate's a strong word, but I hated him on the pitch for no valid reason other than he was a pain. He was just always where he shouldn't be. I remember trying to tackle him, and it was like hitting like a wall. He was just solid. And I remember thinking, I don't know, he might have only been 21, he might have just had like really silver hair.
But very mature face.
Yeah, I just remember thinking, God, for a fella his age, he is solid.
Tough.
But yeah, just that he springs to mind. He's the one who like come out in my head. And then toughest player I've ever played with, Shingy, Carl Shingler. Yeah. Just an absolute machine. Played, I think he's played every single position on the rugby field bar front row. And when I first met him, I'd have been about 16, 17, and he was playing scrum half in the second team at Holton. He was just coming back from an injury or his illness. He'd had testicular cancer, hadn't he? So I think he was just coming back from that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
A good long time ago. So obviously I was about 16, 17, playing second team scrum half, and he ripped spread off me. Like, I can't remember what it did. I had to drop the ball, or and he proper, I remember it sticks in, like, he was proper, he had shaved head, nowhere, because it all fell out and stuff. Yeah. So he was just scurry. And I remember thinking, oh God, I'm not doing that again. Might upset him.
Yeah.
Obviously, got some old Carl, he's a good mate of mine. But yeah, toughest fella I've ever played rugby with. Like,
I love Shingy Me, but do you know what, mate? What, he's a top player, but his dark heart probably come to the fore more than his rugby ability with people. But he could definitely play.
Oh, mate, he was a great
rugby player. Clever.
Do you know what? He's one of them who's he's probably one of them people who's good at most things he does. Sporting wise, he used to play roller hockey, like in his younger days, and I think ice hockey as well. But yeah, you've got to be fit to play that. That's
where the anger comes from as well,
right? Yeah, but like I say, he's played everywhere. He's captained Halton, he's played fullback, he's played standoff, he's played scrum half, he's played in the centres, he's played back row, all across the back row. And I think the way he was playing second row, I think Tank was picking him at second row. To be able to do, or I never, you know, you get people who can play a lot of positions, but they're not as good as the position they should play, if you know what I mean. But Carl never lets himself down in any position he ever played.
Yeah. Oh, he's class, Carl. So your favourite away ground, mate, that you've played at? We've been to some shitholes, mate, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. The one that sticks out, as a kid playing for the Marys, I used to love playing at Saddleworth Rangers, and I don't know why. But yeah, used to love playing there. And then as an adult, probably the one that sticks out for me, just because it's a nice place to go and play rugby, is Broughton Park in Manchester. I think their setup is, like, brilliant. They've got everything you need there, haven't they? And the pitch looks well looked after. And so yeah, that's the one that sticks out, where you think, yeah, I don't mind going playing there. That's a nice place to play. There's some, like you said, there's some atrocious, even now, 2023, there's some atrocious places to play rugby, like.
Yeah, there is. So if you could go back and tell a younger you something, mate, what would it be?
Don't know. I was having a laugh actually the other week with my mum and dad in the kitchen at the house, and my mum said something about, I'd said something about playing, and my mum said, do you miss playing? I said, oh yeah, I'd love to play. I said, but I'd like to play with my brain now, but with my body as your a 21-year-old. Yeah, because I think there's nothing specific I'd tell myself, but I think there's loads of stuff. Just listen more, perhaps, and not be a sulky, mad ass when you didn't get picked and things like that. Just be a bit more tough.
Yeah. Right, mate. So you're out on the piss. The microphone ends up in your hands. What song are you giving us?
Mustang Sally, really badly. touched on it a little bit earlier. My kid brother's, like I say, he plays drums, plays guitar, sings, he's in a band, but he can sing. And I remember going to, he'd have been about 13 or 14. No, he might have been a bit older than that. Maybe 15-ish. But anyway, we went to a party. A friend of the family's son's 21st, I think it was. And they had karaoke. And he got up. My mum and dad had never seen him sing, and I'd never heard him sing. And he got up and sang Mustang Sally, and literally, you'd have swore, like, the commitments were on stage. He was spot on, like, it's every note. So since then, I try and do that, but I'm just not as good, just awful, like, terrible.
My stars in your eyes at the party, he smashed it.
Yeah,
people might not remember that, actually, what a show.
I know, it was great.
Yeah, right, mate. So if you're willing to, a 1 to 15 that you've played with.
Yeah, again, there'll be some names I've missed off here, but this is literally perhaps not the best players I've probably played with, but the players I've enjoyed playing with the most. And people are in for what they give and what they offer to a team and a club. So I'll start off, I'll go full back, start off in the backs where I like. So full back is Riz, Andy Riley. When I first came up the Wids, Andy, I think, was about 18, I think he'd have been, would he? Playing fullback, first team, absolutely brilliant. Lightning, great under eye ball, just seemed to be the complete player at that young age, you know what I mean? And stood out for me, really, just really good. He's me 15. My 14 would be Steve Miller. He's probably a fullback, really. That's where he played most of his rugby for Alton, was at fullback. But another player who can play across the backs, really. He can play 10, can play 9, can certainly play 13, and was great on the wing and at fullback. But good mates with Steve. Was his best man at his wedding. He also gets in for his kicking. He was mustard. He was up there probably 85-90% for his kicking. Great player. And good mate of mine. 13, Paul Kerfey. Me and Paul were probably centre partners at Holton for 3, 4, maybe 5 years. And he's just unplayable, mate. But just a young Paul Kerfey was, when he was 18, 19, 21, just unplayable, just outstanding, just giving the ball. That was Macca's plan. All along Macca playing 10, that was just give Kerf the ball. I didn't see, Andy will probably tell you, I didn't see a lot of the ball at Alton a lot of the time because it was literally, I was the decoy, give it Kerf. But he was brilliant. And I don't know if you'd ever seen him play or you've seen him
not
play.
Not as a kid. Yeah,
he was quick, solid, stocky, but short, obviously same height as he is now, but just, a great player. And like I say, we were mates, went on holidays together, went out on the ale together. Just a great player to play with. An absolute lunatic, by the way. just a great player to play rugby with. Just a great player. At 12, struggled. Well, I didn't struggle with this, but there was a few names popped up at 12. But I went for Phil Glover. Again, when I first put the weights, Phil was playing 10. When Andy wasn't available, but he played 12. He played another one of them players could play in a few positions. Played 12. Played 13. I partnered him a few times. Playing 13, he was at 13, I was at 12. And again, get on with Phil. Great rugby player, great rugby brain, great defender. Like, just get stuck in, does the stuff that needs to be done. And never had a bad word to say about Phil, to be honest. Thought he was a great player. And coming down on the other wing then, Smigger. I remember when Smigger came into the first team, and I remember Newey coming, I've got this kid in the Colts, he's only played a few games, but he's absolutely brilliant. And you know what you're thinking, 18, like, what's he going to know? He can't be that good. But he was just like, again, like Rizzo, just a young kid, no fear, absolutely, I'll do what I want. And you know, the ball will go over his head, and a lot of older fullbacks would probably pick it up, look, and kick, get away. Both Smigger and Riz didn't have that in their head. Like, it was, I'm having a run. And, you know, if I get caught, then I get caught. But it's up to you lot, you faculty, to get back and help me out. I think that was his mentality. But just a pleasure to watch. Just great to watch playing and play rugby with him. And a nice lad with it. Tim was the easiest pick. I don't even think I've mentioned his name enough already, haven't I? But it'd be Andy Mack. Just a great lad, great player. Could put you through a gap. without even looking at the pass, you know what I mean? Just clever with it, game management, not just a dummy and a pass and a, he had everything, game management, his kicking, just communication, talking, just, yeah, just probably one of the best players I've ever played with.
Yeah.
Nine, this was a tough call list at nine. And I've gone for Duncan Watt, played with him at Holton. And literally because I've picked him because he's my mate and I've played the most with him, the most amount of time. But very close between, I could have had Lammy or I could have had Andy Orr. But I went for Watty just purely because the length of time I played rugby with him. Yeah, so that's him. But again, a good rugby player. I've never seen anyone tackle as low as him. Literally, he'd fit in this day and age now. He tackles like on the ankle every time. Never. I've never seen him try and tackle anyone above the ankle, like or above the knee. Mm. Just that was his way of tackling. Just yeah.
Nuts. So
yeah, just yeah, but a good player. So then we're coming into the forwards. So I don't know which way these go around, but I've picked Vickers. Steve Vickerstaff. Again, when I first got the Wids, was great, welcomed me, got on with him. You know, similar interest in music and things like that. So yeah, Vickers would be the great player, great lad on the field, great lad on the air. Always good to have on the back of a bus coming back from a win.
Yes, like a gentle giant Vickers.
Yeah, top lad. And then Miocca, I struggle with forwards, me, because I don't really pay much attention. But I've gone for Derek Dyer. Solely because of who he is and what he is and what he'd done. And playing front row for all them years, you know, played hooker, played prop, but would play, you know, and he's still playing at, you know, whatever he was, day older than grass, I think, still just turning up and and playing and putting his body on the line. And yeah, so Derek gets in. And then at three, I picked Mossy, Gaz Moss. And then when I first come up the Wits, I don't think Mossy was playing, he was injured with one of his biscuit shoulders. But when he came up, again, opened my eyes to like amateur rugby. He was so, I suppose professional is the right word, around rehabbing and exercising and doing everything right so that he could play. And he played a couple of times in the seconds when I was second team captain. Because my first year as captain, Mossy was club captain. So again, we got on quite well with the teams and he played a couple of times in the seconds coming back from injury. I think he played back row at Gloss at one time and was proper blowing. But again, was, you know, a great lad and a great player. But yeah, Mossy gets in. His second role, dead easy for me, this one. Second roles, Bomber. Class Bomber. When I first got the Wids, he was second row in the first. Quite contrasting, me two second roles, but Bomber was like athletic, a rugby player. And the other guy, which is Fieldy, he gets a bad rep, Fieldy. I think he's a great player, but he gets a bad rep because of his discipline. But you need that type of person sometimes in a game of rugby to take the game by the scruff of the neck or not take a backward step. And just be the enforcer, if you like. But yeah, loads of time for Fieldy, get on him really well. And I always liked him as a player. I actually tried to get him to Holton one night in Top of the Town. He was stood at the bar and I said, "Oh, I've heard you're not playing. You fancy coming down Holton?" And he just flat, point blank refused. No, that was all he said. You know who he is, like just in his way.
Just blunt.
No. No, I was like, all right, Matt, no worries. Do you want to be here? that was that. But yeah, get on really well. Right, then be back row. I'd have Chingy. Carl's in there at six. obviously you've said all I need to say about Carl. Don't think I need to pump his tyres up anymore. Seven, gone for Tom Mack. A proper seven, a proper open side flanker, rugby player, clever with it, good over the ball, good in the tackle, quick, intelligent, and just, again, when it was an eye-opener when I first came up the Wids, because you had all these young lads, and I was 26, 27, but these young lads who would come out of the Colts, yourself and Tom Mack and Juzzy and Rizza, and who just could play, and like, had no, like I said before, had no fear, just played rugby, there was no shackles, it was just, but Tom fits into that bracket, great, number seven. And then eight, again, close call, there was a few names, yourself was on it, John, to be honest, and there was a couple of others, but I went with Kev Farrer. Kev was just, again, another young lad who was just outstanding, and just didn't seem to care about his body in any shape or form, would throw himself anywhere in a tackle, in a ruck, in a maul, go from a scrum. Just, I'm not, I wouldn't say he's the classic number eight, is he? Like, in size wise, he's short and stocky. Number eight these days tend to be quite big and bulky, but he didn't lack anything. He gave everything, like Kevin, great player. So yeah, pleasure to play with all of them. I think that'd be a good side.
You've been listening to Trot the Eggin'. Thanks to our sponsors, Bardell Sports. Follow us on Twitter @TrotTheEggin and Instagram @Trot_the_egg_in.